Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the World Cup special. And as promised in our last podcast, I did say that I'll be doing some podcasts throughout the World Cup, unlike a lot of other outlets and newspapers that have promised they're going to be doing daily podcasts. I don't quite have the resources, the funds, or the team to be able to execute a podcast every day. But whatever, innit? Sometimes less is more. So we'll be doing three or four podcasts throughout the World Cup, going through all the talking points and interesting issues throughout the tournament. I'm joined by the first of our two guests on the pod this week, our United supporter, Jonesy. Jones, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Yourself?
I'm well, man. I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for coming on the pod. Our second guest is calling me as we're live right now, so I'm assuming he's here, Mike. So we'll get him on in just a minute, but let's just continue on with the pod, guys. Jones, first of all, how excited about this World Cup are you? Because we were just talking off air a minute ago and you were flat, man. You were like, you're not feeling it.
No, to be fair, as I said to you, since 1998... there's been a couple of World Cups that I felt were good, but since 2010, for me, 2014 wasn't that great, to be honest with you, especially looking at it from the African perspective. All the shenanigans that took place, it was an absolute disaster.
It was embarrassing.
So for me, 2014 wasn't that great. Hopefully this time around we'll see something a bit more uplifting, even though the first game is between Russia and Saudi Arabia.
It's not the greatest start, is it? Wow.
But I'm optimistic.
Okay.
I'm optimistic.
I'm actually quite excited about this one. I've not been excited about a World Cup for three or four. I thought Brazil was good, but beforehand I wasn't excited about this one. I'm actually excited about. We're going to be going through not every single team on this week's pod. We're going to be going, just to let the listeners know, we're going to be picking out the main contenders. We're going to be picking out a handful of the outside bets that we think might do a ting and might surprise a few people. And we're also going to be going through some of the African nations as well, because I think apart from the BBC, I've not seen anybody really kind of mention or show any kind of spotlight on any of the African nations. So I don't profess to be an expert on the teams that are taking place from that continent, but we're going to go through the African teams as well. And at the back end of the pod, very briefly, we've got a couple of points, talking points that are not World Cup related. First of all, do you think, Jonesy, Russia could be the worst host nation in recent memory of a World Cup? And I'm not talking about socially and politically. I'm talking about as a footballing nation. Could they be the worst footballing nation to host a World Cup in terms of embarrassing themselves?
I think so. I mean, with every World Cup, you would like for the host nations to progress a bit further to keep that whole momentum going, stadiums filled up with supporters. The worst thing that could happen is watching the first game and everybody just finish on a downer. This ain't going to be great. Because the World Cup, you start as you mean to go on.
Yes, we
saw this happen in South Africa. They weren't that great, but the supporters were very lively. And in the end, when South Africa finally got knocked out, couldn't progress any longer, some of the stadiums were a bit empty. Didn't get lively again right up to the quarterfinals and semifinals and so on. So possibly, yes, if you look at Russia and Saudi Arabia. Horrible. It's not the best, but if they can hang in there for a bit longer, then the atmosphere will still be lively.
I've done a bit of reading up on them, because I don't profess to, and I don't know if you do, I don't know much about Russian football or Russia, the team, but I've been reading up on a few people who are across Russia. And listen, they just say it's grim. I mean, most of them not only think that Russia won't get out of the group, the way the kind of tone of some of the writing I've been reading is they're talking like Russia might not even score a goal. They might not even score a goal at their own World Cup. And that's what I mean by they could be the worst World Cup hosts in living memory. So we're going to see how well they do, but it's not looking good. It's a very old team as well, the Russian team. And just finally, before we get into the outsiders, VAR, do you think VAR will steal the show? This is the first World Cup where they're going to implement VAR. Will it be the biggest talking point come the end of the World Cup, negatively or positively?
Do you know what? I think looking back 2010, you can even go as far as 1990, isn't it? Where Maradona.
That's right.
So in terms of World Cup, I think it is right that
86.
VAR... It was 86. Mexico 86. It is right that VAR is used, especially 2010, England against Germany. Was it Germany?
Yes, it was.
Frank Lampard?
Yes, yeah.
Right. And that caused a huge upset for the English players. And I think we've seen, for us in the Premier League, we've had the chance, and other parts of the world, we've had the chance to of using VAR. Mm-hmm. Whereas other countries haven't had opportunity. I don't know how that's going to play with them, because from the outside, the countries outside always feels as though the bigger teams get the advantage.
Yes.
And so if a VAR is used, mm-hmm. I don't know how people might respond to that. You know, but I think in the tournament like the World Cup, I think it's crucial that it is used, because we've seen a few dodgy decisions that have happened in the World Cup.
Completely, and that's why I have some reservations about it being used in this World Cup. I just think it's too much in its infancy to be used on a scale and a competition this big. Do you know what I mean? I just think it's too early to implement. But we'll see.
No,
I think throw it in.
I mean, do you remember? I think I came on your podcast. I think sometime last year when it was firstly introduced.
That's right, you did.
And I was against it.
Yes.
But looking at it and looking at what's happening in tournaments, especially the World Cup, I think it is crucial. I think it's needed. I absolutely think it is needed.
Okay.
I think it is needed.
Okay. Let's now get into some of the outside bets for glory. Some of the teams, first of all, that are putting that kind of second tier, that group of nations that might surprise a few people, might cause a few bloody noses. Let's start with Croatia, Jonesy. They've been a team that a lot of people have said, you know, they might do a little thing. They might surprise a few people. They've got some quality players in their nation, in their side. I was reading off the field shenanigans could derail their campaign. I think most people would know about Lovren and Modric, accused of committing perjury, defending the head of the federation there. Do you think that kind of circus that kind of has dominated a lot of the build up for the Croatian national team could affect what happens on the pitch?
Absolutely. We've seen what's happened, especially let's talk about England.
Mm-hmm.
Not talking about England team, but we've seen off-field activities have a big impact in tournaments. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think 2010, when Rooney, to me, that was the tournament, that was the World Cup where Rooney was supposed to excel.
Yeah.
But at the back of his mind, I think that was when the newspapers had the story about him with what he did with alleged women or whatnot, right? So I think that played a big part in the way in which Rooney performed.
Mm-hmm.
And not just with Croatia alone. Again, if we come back to Nigeria, come back to Africa, a lot of the African teams, when off-the-field activities were going on, it had a massive impact on the play. So I think you're right. I think that's probably going to affect Croatia in a way. I know that I've listened to a lot of pundits as well talking about Croatia being one of the underdogs, even though they are in the second tier, but won't be surprised if they're able to progress and go far.
They've got some quality players. I've mentioned there already, kind of Lovren's a decent centre-back. Yeah. Modric, we know, is quality, although coming to the twilight of his career. Perisic, Mandžukić also coming to the back end, but you know, if you give him a chance, he'll bang. Rakitic as well. So they've got the players to really, you know, you'd think that that's a team that could, if they got to the quarterfinals, you wouldn't be like, whoa.
You wouldn't be surprised.
You wouldn't be like,
but you see, but then again, to me, Croatia reminds me a bit of Belgium. You've listed the names there, top players, but when it comes to the big tournaments, do we see them perform? They go missing.
Yeah.
So because I was having this discussion with another sports journalist, and I said, look, I would have put my money on Croatia to go all the way, looking at the team on paper. However, looking at the off-field activities that's happened and it being a tournament and how much that can affect players' confidence on the pitch, I'm not so sure now.
I think as well, I never get the impression that Croatia really grab it. The last two or three tournaments, Euros included as well, they've had the squad to really get to a semi-final of definitely the Euros.
Yeah.
But they're just, you know, when you watch them play, you never really feel like they really believe we can do something here. And I think that's what lets them down a lot of the time. Portugal. Now, I put out on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram this morning, just to kind of all of our followers, anybody, you know, who's your pick? And quite a few people were mentioning Portugal as like someone to look out for. Now,
really?
Yeah, a lot of people saying that Portugal could be the team that give a few teams a bloody nose. And I'm looking at it, Jones, and I'm looking at their centre-back pairing of Pepe and Alves, and I think there's a combined age of like 80.
Yeah.
It's something ridiculous. You know what I mean? That's not the cornerstone of which you want to base success from. And also as well, I've got players here, Andre Silva, João Mario, William Carvalho, yeah. Ricardo Quaresma, yeah. Rafael Guerreiro, and Adrian Silva, all coming off really poor seasons.
Yeah.
If you look at their clubs where they played this season, I looked at all of them, and they've all had poor to good at best seasons this year. So I know they've got Ronaldo, but they've got a fading Ronaldo. And I just think to myself, is that what everyone's basing their possible...
Even when they had Ronaldo at his peak...
They couldn't do it.
I mean, with Portugal, I think the last time, that the one big tournament I remember was the Euros, wasn't it?
Yes.
Portugal.
They won the last Euros.
And looking at how, to me personally, watching the way in which they performed in that tournament, they had some good performances. Not to forget, Ronaldo was carrying an injury.
Yeah.
But to me, they played better when Ronaldo was not on the field.
Well, my question is going to be, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because right. It could be a dumb question. Do you think they're more effective without Ronaldo?
Absolutely, 100%. Because Ronaldo is the superstar. Mm. When you have the ball, you got to find Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. Players go into their shell simply because you need to get the ball to Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. And I think when Ronaldo is off the pitch, everybody comes out the show. Players start to take on more responsibilities. And to me, that was what worked in their favour, why they were able to progress. I don't think they have the best players in the whole tournament. Mm. I think they have a good collective of players who work hard for one another. Mm-hmm. However, I think Ronaldo being in there gives them that extra edge. However, if Ronaldo is not part of the team, if he's not in there, I think the players roll up their sleeves and I think they give good accounts of themselves.
But you're lacking them potentially the best match winner in the world.
Yeah.
So it's a messy one. But no, I was thinking to myself, it might sound a bit daft, but are they actually not necessarily better, but are they more effective?
Effective, I think,
Without Ronaldo. Yeah. So I'm not so sure about Portugal either. They're in a group with Spain as well, Morocco and Iran. So they should progress. I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if they were the shock team, big team that didn't get out of their group. I've got a feeling that Morocco might do a thing, but we'll get to that in just a minute. Yeah. And then the final team I want to mention as an outsider, they're my outside bet, is Uruguay. I'm keeping an eye on Uruguay. I don't think they're going to win the World Cup, but I think Uruguay could go really deep in this competition. There's goals galore between Suarez and Cavani as a front two. They've got the Atletico Madrid centre-back pairing of Godin and Jimenez. I think there's a lot of quality in that team. What do you think about Uruguay's going deep in this competition?
Well, looking at Uruguay in the group that they're in Group A, is Egypt, Saudi Arabia and Russia. So Uruguay should progress. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Uruguay, I get a bit heartbroken. Simply because back in 2010, the World Cup in South Africa.
I know where you're going with this.
Yes. Suarez. So Ghanaians actually do not like Uruguay. I mean, look, when it gets to the big tournaments, especially this tournament, as you mentioned on the outside teams, I think probably Uruguay will be the team that I think can go further than the rest, like the likes of Croatia or Portugal.
Yeah.
Simply because I think the likes of Suarez, the group that they're in, I don't think they will struggle. I think they'll probably be the team that will score the most goals.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with
that's
that.
That's what I think.
I think going to bang a few teams. And they've got this kid, Lucas Torreira, who's a defensive midfielder who my club, Arsenal, have been heavily linked with. I've been watching him the last few days. I knew nothing about him. And he looks really good. He's young DM in the middle of the pitch there. They've got some good players in that Uruguay squad. The manager, I was told by someone that follows South American football, where they've got there isn't the best, but he seems to be making them a much more functional and lesser flair team. But they're the team that I think are going to be one to watch.
England?
We're going to get to England in a minute. They probably would be in that group as well. But we're going to kind of get to England in just a moment. Because got a few things I want to talk about with England as well.
Right.
Okay, so let's go into some of the big boys now, some of the main contenders that we think are going to make an impression and lift the trophy out in Russia. We're going to go through the main favourites and contenders to win it. My money's on Spain, and to do so, I want to bring in a man that knows more about the Spanish team and La Liga than most our regular experts on Spain and La Liga, Ben Hayward. Ben, how you doing, man?
Yeah, good, Jordan. Thanks, and you?
I'm very well, man. First of all, you're heading out to Russia in a few days, is that correct?
That's right. I'm going to be going, yeah.
It's your first one, isn't it? Your first World Cup.
It's not. It's, oh, it's actually not. My third World Cup.
Oh, yeah, shame. Not, okay. So you're a veteran. Fair enough. Okay, let's get into it now, Ben. Then, so my favourites for the World Cup glory are Spain. Tell me why they're vulnerable and why they're not the team to put the money on. Where are they weak?
Well, I don't think they're weak. And you know, I would agree with you, Jordan, that they're definitely one of the favourites to lift the trophy. Perhaps where they're weak, you know, look at their last two friendly matches over the last week, 10 days. They obviously drew Switzerland 1-1. They beat Tunisia 1-0 a few days ago. Maybe perhaps they're lacking, for all their quality, for all their talented players, maybe they're lacking a star player. You know, they haven't got a Neymar, they haven't got a Messi, they haven't got a Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, talent all the way through the team, you know, in the defence, the midfield, everywhere you look, you know, got some of the best players in the world. But, you know, up front, I would say there's a little bit of a problem position. Diego Costa hasn't quite done it for Spain, you know, since the last World Cup. He's still around, but not scoring prolifically. Iago Aspas has done very well off the bench, but it looks like he's probably not going to start the tournament. So there's a bit of a lack of goals, which could be a concern for Spain.
And in Spain, do they see anything less than a last four as a failure? Or are they even expecting a final place?
Yeah, I think with all the talent that they have and the quality players that they have, I think you've got to be looking at least to get to the last four. And I think anything less than that will be considered a disappointment. Yeah, expectations for Spain have risen dramatically over the last few years. And even though Brazil was a failure, no, not getting out of the group, obviously, you know, the World Cup win in 2010, the two European Championship wins, and like I say, all of the quality that they have means that, yeah, minimum, I would say, semi-final.
Okay, let's talk now a little bit about Madrid. Zidane has gone. A few hours ago, the news broke that they had announced their new manager. First of all, tell me a little bit about the impact on the Real Madrid team for any incomings and outgoings that Zidane now going may have. And tell us a little bit about the new guy in charge.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting one, the timing of the appointment. You know, Lopetegui, Spain coach, 2 days before a World Cup is going to start. You know, it doesn't seem ideal. Obviously, Real Madrid wanted to get the appointment announced before the tournament, and they've done so. Remains to be seen what impact it's going to have on Spain and the Spanish players. As for incomings and outgoings, you would imagine that Lopetegui is in contact with Florentino Perez and you know, the Real Madrid board and everyone at Real. Even though he's concentrating on the World Cup, he has to be involved, surely. You know, you can't leave it until July the 15th. The night of the World Cup final, you know,
yeah.
If Spain are still involved, you know, you can't wait until midsummer before you start planning for next season. It has to be done now. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, he likes to play attacking football. He's very much 4-3-3. He's very, very meticulous. He likes to be close to the players, to have a good relationship with the players. You know, I think it's a positive appointment. He started his career at Real Madrid as a player. He's coached Castilla, the B team, like Zidane did. And, you know, it's very much a safe pair of hands. Time will tell. But as for incomings and outgoings, you know, I think he'll want Cristiano Ronaldo to stay. I think he'll want Gareth Bale to stay. And, you know, if you can sign Neymar, then you sign him. I don't think that depends on Lopetegui. But I don't think there are going to be major changes. I think he'll be happy pretty much with what he has.
We're short on time, Ben, but I want to get some more intel from you on the new guy, probably the back end of the World Cup, and if my prediction is correct, and he lifts the World Cup with Spain, obviously there'll be a lot more spotlight on Lopetegui going to Real Madrid. I'm going to catch you out in Russia in a few days' time, but for now, thank you very much for your time, Ben. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Jordan. Take care. See
you there. Okay, so that was Ben giving us a bit of a roundup on Spain and what's happening in La Liga. I've said it on a few times now, Spain on my tip. I'm now joined. We've got Mike in the building. Mike, what are you saying, man?
Yeah, all good, man. Can't complain.
Good. Cheers for coming on the pod once again.
No worries.
Let's now talk, guys, about the heavyweights, the main contenders we think are going to win the World Cup. before you, in fact, you both tell me your tips for the World Cup, let's just go through the four or five of them, and then you can tell me afterwards who you're going with. Let's kick off with France. Now, Mike, I've got a couple of issues with France. Their squad is probably the deepest in terms of they've probably got two
best talent.
Positions. They're probably the best talent of all the nations. My first issue with them is there's not much leadership in that squad on the pitch. Even the more experienced players in that French squad don't smack to me of players that are like a Ramos for Spain or, I don't know, a Thiago at Brazil. Mm-hmm. How well do you think they're going to do in this World Cup? They've got all the talent, but do you think there's something lacking?
I think my problem is not so much the leadership. I feel like the problem is they've got too much talent.
Mm.
And I think it's a bit, I don't know, I want to see them do well, but they've just got too much talent. I don't see how he's going to fit all of them in,
mm-hmm.
because he's got Griezmann. He really likes Giroud.
Mm-hmm.
He likes to start Giroud.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the flanks, you've got Mbappe, you've got Lamar, you've got Dembele.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's just too much options, and I think that's going to be a problem for him. I'd rather to have 11 to 14 talented players. That way I can tweak things here and there, but when you've got that much, I feel like it'll be a problem for him.
Jones, Mike flags up my second problem with the French team, which is why I don't think they're going to win it. The manager. I think Deschamps is an average manager. I don't rate him at all, and I don't trust him to harness that amount of talent that Mike talks about. Do you think that he is potentially their biggest problem?
Well, I don't think he's their biggest problem per se. The reason why I say that is because, yes, what Michael's saying, they've got a lot of talent, but they don't seem to perform. I think probably France right now, you could say this is the golden generation mm-hmm. for France. I don't think Deschamps is the reason why they're not performing.
Do you rate
Maybe.
Him?
Say that again?
Do you rate him?
Do I rate him? Well...
That's the problem. that's what you're talking about.
It's tough. But rate him in what sense? Because if you look at the caliber of managers out there these days, mm-hmm. there's only who is up there, who is not up there. In terms of France, I think it's just, again, another team that has all the right players but seem to fail when the big tournament comes up. I don't think it's manager per se, because you can bring in another manager and they'll still underperform.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot of stars. Sometimes it's best to have just the right players in the right positions.
Mm-hmm.
Not have, if you have too many stars, it causes a problem,
mm-hmm.
because you don't get the underdogs, the ones that roll up their sleeves to put in the hard work.
Mm.
However, then you can compare the French team right now to the Brazilian team that won the 2002 World Cup.
Mm.
You had Rivaldo, you had Ronaldo, you had, I think even Ronaldinho mm-hmm. was in there, but mm-hmm. they were able to get the right balance. You had Carlos, you were able to get the right balance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think with France, I just think it's just another team that just fails to turn up on a big day.
And you mentioned stars there. Pogba is probably the biggest star in that team. I really want Pogba to have a good tournament because I like him. I've got issues with him, but that's separate.
I want Pogba to finish as the best player of the tournament. But again, he's unpredictable. You've seen him at Man United. If the sun is out...
Mm.
Dye in his hair, he's good to go.
Mm.
Another day, he goes missing.
Mm.
I don't know. The other day, I heard he got booed playing for France the other day.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's got a lot to prove. We've been saying for a long while now, he's got the potential. We need to see that potential.
He's got to step up and grab a tournament.
Yeah.
Do you think, Mike, that with Pogba, because my issue is, I don't think you can get Pogba and Griezmann in the same 11 and have them at their strongest. I don't think there's a formation that you can have where you can, in my opinion, you can have those two in the same 11. And that, for me, is where the manager has to make a tough decision. And I don't know that he will do that. Is there a scenario you foresee where Pogba could be replaced by Tolisso?
I think the problem with Pogba is people have come to expect too much from him. And I use that word expect because he does the average or the basics well.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's considered a flair player, people expect him to take on about eight men and then spray a pass, or take on eight men, bang a shot top corner or something like that. When if you see his stats from early United this season, he's done all right.
Yeah, yeah.
but the expectations are up here. And when your expectations are up here, you expect him to set the world alight.
10 out of 10 every week.
Now, with regards to Griezmann and Pogba being in the same team, I think it's definitely possible. Mm-hmm. And this is my problem with Deschamps. I think I would say he's better than decent, because he got to the final of the Euros, to be fair to him.
And lost it to an average Portuguese team without Ronaldo. on his home soil.
But still, he got to the final, you know. I'll give him credit for getting to the final.
Okay. It takes, you're generous, more generous than me.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a decent manager to get to the final, at least. But the thing is, it's the people around him that are the problem. Griezmann and Pogba is not the problem. It's the people around him. For example, he's got Kante next to him. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You know Kante is about the dog work. Mm. And he's so much more than that, because he can play football. Mm. So I feel it's about, in terms of the system, it has to be a 4-2-3-1 with Griezmann just behind Giroud, because for some reason he loves Giroud.
But I just finally on France, I get why he likes Giroud, because Giroud is probably the best target man for someone like a Hazard or a Griezmann. Serious, and it's proven. And if you ask the likes of Hazard, those guys play better because he's the target man. Yeah. He does all the donkey
work. You're
telling
me that you cannot have a better system with Giroud not in that team?
I'm saying if you want to get the best out of someone like Griezmann, he likes a pole to play off. And Giroud is that pole.
I don't dispute that. But Griezmann can also play on the last man.
He can. You know, he can.
It's all about style of play. But I get what you're saying. I understand.
I'm not saying Olivier Giroud is a world beater.
We're going to go with Giroud starting. Mm-hmm. You know, if Giroud's starting and Griezmann's just behind him, then you have Pogba and Kante, or you have Pogba and Tolisso, however you want to play it. That team should be able to play with Pogba and Griezmann in it.
It should. I just don't think Deschamps will find a way to do that. Let's move on to Germany now. Jones, my only issue with Germany is the hunger. After winning a World Cup, my questions are, do you have the hunger to go again? The talent is there in the main, generally. I think they've probably got the best back five in the tournament. But I question the hunger to go again. Apart from that, I don't see too many weaknesses with the German team. What do you think about their prospects?
About their hunger, I mean, I would say Germany going to the tournament just to get beat. Mm. I think they will want to win it. Mm-hmm. It's easy to win it the first time. It's much harder to defend it.
To retain it.
Looking at the German team, as you said, I went through the way in which they play, and I'm finding it hard to find any weaknesses. However, again, we've got France. Okay, to me, I think I put my money on France.
Okay,
I put my money on France. I think the German team, although they've played together for a long time, I think they're more like aging. I think that generation is going.
They've got a few kids coming.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think in terms of the team that I think will shine in this World Cup, I think France. Mm-hmm. Compared to Germany, I just like the style of the way France plays. Mm-hmm. But looking at Germany, like I said, I've tried to see the weaknesses. I don't find any weakness in the German team. I think they'll probably be, if they don't turn up, they'll probably be...
They're banned for last
downfall.
Four.
Their own downfall, yeah. Really. Yeah. If they don't turn up,
they should be a last four.
They should be. Yeah. They should be.
Okay. Sorry, I've just came through. Just finally on Germany, Mike. No Sané. Do you understand why they've not picked Sané?
Yes, he doesn't recapture his form that he does for Man City, for Germany. That Germany team, yes. I'm gonna have to go against you, because you could pick a World Cup winning team for the players that didn't go to the World Cup with Germany. Mm. It's ridiculous, mm-hmm. the amount of players they got. And you got Max Meyer in there. Mm-hmm. You got Brandt. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for them. That's my tip for the World Cup, by the way.
Really?
Germany.
Yeah. Germany. Yeah. Okay.
My only fear is the striker.
So they've got Timo Werner.
They don't have a class closer.
They don't. I think I said they've got the best back five. One of the best back fives, I think. I think the left back, Hector, got relegated, I think, with his club this year. So I think of that back five, he may be the guy not on form. Yeah. Let's go now to Argentina. Romero's pulled out, the goalkeeper. Mike, the keeper they've got in there now, I've not got his name down here, but he's not very good. I'm reliably informed. It's not Caballero, it's somebody else. Do you know much about
Did they call up Wally?
I don't know who they called up, but the guy that they called up, apparently the Argentinian team are not happy with. So I'm not sure about. Do you think that what's their biggest problem? Because we know they've got going forward. What's the biggest problem for Argentina and why they're kind of perennial failures at these kind of competition? Is it as simple as that they can't find a system to get the best out of Messi?
Well, I would say Messi performs to a certain degree. Again, it's the players around him.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, it's the players around him. Messi's Messi. Messi will be Messi. Mm. Even Messi on a bad day.
I'm still better than most.
There you go. Mm. So I think the problem is the balance again. The balance of the midfield. Their transition from defence to attack is... I mean, watching them recently, they've been... It's a struggle to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
The reliance on Messi as well is a bit of a problem.
It's too much.
Look at the... If you take Messi out of that team, you have star men that are star men for their clubs. Mm-hmm. Higuain, Aguero, Dybala, Di Maria, you know, so on and so forth. And then the further you go back, quality starts to decrease.
So here's my thing as well on Argentina, Jonesy. In the middle, any team that's got Mascherano and Bigliatti in the middle, you're going to have problems. I can't think of, in the history of the world, a duo midfield slower than those two. There's literally no legs at all.
But then if you look at Argentina coming into the World Cup, it got to a point where they nearly didn't qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So them coming into this World Cup, they're not coming up, coming into it in great shape, I don't think. The last time the World Cup, it was Argentina and Germany in the finals, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. However, to me, when it gets to Argentina, I get frustrated. Because you look at the names, Di Maria, Aguero, Messi, the list just goes on. Mm-hmm. And it's just, again, when it gets to the big tournaments, you rely on these players to perform. They're performing for the domestic clubs. When it gets to the national team, the big stage where you expect them to perform,
it doesn't work. Well, here's the thing. Again, a lot of people have been reading articles who follow Argentina and South American football. Yeah. Sampaoli is the manager there, and some people have described him as a genius for the work that he's done at previous clubs. Is he the guy that could finally solve this conundrum of trying to, you know, get all the talented players to perform? Do you think... Because his style of play is different, what I'm reading, I've read a lot, different to what they've had in the past. He's much more of a kind of pressing front foot, aggressive kind of guy, but with the slow players they've got behind the attackers, I don't know if you can press and that if his style of play will be conducive to the players he's got in that squad.
I mean, if you're looking to press, then your recovery is important, and if you're talking about the players not having the legs, then it's going to be difficult to be able to maintain the level at which they want to play. I think everything has been around Messi. Did they have the right personnel? I think so. With the type of players they have. But I don't know. It's just there's something missing. Whether he'll be able to transform the team, who knows? We'll wait and see. But I just keep getting frustrated with the teams like Argentina. I want Argentina to progress, to go far. I want Messi to live up to the hype. I want to see Aguero. I want to see Di Maria. But it gets to the World Cup and it's just... It's just not happening.
And it's sad to watch as well. Let's finally, Brazil, Mike. We reckon are they the correct favourites going into this tournament? Do they have
I'm ready for them, man. I'm ready to watch them.
You ready to watch them?
I've been keeping up with them. Although my favourites are Germany, I'm excited by Brazil.
Why?
If not Germany, I'm going for Brazil.
That
attack, man.
It's naughty.
Oh,
isn't it?
My days.
It's naughty. It's naughty. But unlike
Argentina, young and fresh.
Yeah, and unlike Argentina, they've actually got good defenders and midfielders as well.
Do you know what I mean? So I'm ready, and I got a good keeper.
Yes, two.
Good keeper battle.
Two, yeah, they got two
good
there,
keeper
yeah.
Battle. So I'm ready for and midfield. Fernandinho.
And I was just gonna say they've probably got the three best DMs in the world in Fernandinho, Casemiro, and who's the third
Fred.
One? And Fred.
Yeah.
So that we reckon United's Fred. Yeah.
Fred won't touch the pitch, but
yeah,
Fernandinho,
I think he's in problems.
We'll
I will say Brazil probably the world balanced team. I would say for sure going into this tournament, and they've had the down times when I think they've gone through that transitional period where they haven't had the players that we know Brazil possesses. But this tournament, looking at the team, I think Brazil will get up there. Will definitely be up there.
And just finally on Brazil, do you think that the way they lost at their own party, 7-1 at the last tournament, is going to serve as motivation to really show, listen, we're on things this time.
Absolutely.
We're back.
I'm just looking at this team.
You've it's naughty, isn't it?
Coutinho, Willian, Douglas Costa, Neymar, Tyson, Jesus, Firmino.
It's silly.
I think they should do it, you know.
Paulinho as well. I forgot about him. He's a good midfielder as well.
Renato's good as well, man. So listen.
It's a problem. Okay, so you've both kind of told me in amongst that who your tips are. You're going with Germany, Mike, and you're tipping France.
I'll go France.
Okay. Give me a golden boot winner. I'm going with Suarez. Who are you going with?
I think I'll go, that's where I had
Suarez as well, yeah? Mike?
Neymar.
You going with Neymar?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Let's now talk about some of the African nations that are going to be competing in Russia. The teams are Egypt, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal and Tunisia. Right, first of all, Jones, well, I'll just let the listeners know, I've got a Nigerian and a Ghanaian in the room here. Yeah. Jones being the Ghanaian here is a bit awkward, but what happened, bro?
We'll see what happened. Didn't you see the documentary that came out?
I've not seen it yet, but I've heard about it. Right. It sounds naughty.
That's what happened.
Okay, yes. Fair enough.
We had those in 2014 at the World Cup.
For those that haven't seen the documentary, give us just a brief flavour.
There's a lot of corruption happening across the continent in terms of football. So a lot of the local leagues, especially the Ghana local leagues, where referees are taking money to influence matches. And the Ghana Football Association president, Kwesi Nyantichi, who's also a FIFA member councillor, he's also the vice president for Confederation of African Football, he was filmed collecting money, corruption. So, in the end, the Ghana Football Association has been dissolved. He has resigned as vice president for CAF, and also has FIFA have kicked him out. So that is what happened. And this didn't just start. This started all the way back in 2014. The recent case where the players were meant to be given the appearance money, the bonus. And for some reason, they didn't get their money. So what happened was the president at the time had to send money on the plane to the players before Ghana played against Portugal in the last match. So this was an issue that has been lingering for a very long time.
Okay.
And he's always been accused of being corrupt. He's denied it. He said, if you can prove it, come and prove it. But in the long run, it caught up to him.
Wow.
And now that's what's happened.
Well, one of the nations, African nations, who is going to be in Russia, Morocco. And I don't expect you guys to kind of know everything, as I've had to do a lot of reading and following of people to kind of get an idea of some of the nations that I'm not familiar with. So I don't expect to be experts on these nations. But Morocco, they're in Group B. They're in the group, Mike, with Iran, Portugal and Spain. Now, the smart money would say Spain and Portugal are going to qualify from that group. But I've got a funny feeling Iran might cause an upset in that group and come above Portugal. We were discussing earlier on, I don't rate this Portuguese squad. You're giving me looks there. I don't rate this Portuguese. I don't. Like, they've got too many players in that squad going to this World Cup off form or old. I just don't rate them. By the look on your face,
like who?
Okay, can we kick you the list? I've got the list right here. I'm writing down. Andre Silva, João Mario, West Ham, William Carvalho, Ricardo Quaresma, Rafael Guerreiro, Adrian Silva, some key players there in their team that are all going into this World Cup with poor form. So I just think if you're hanging your hat on Ronaldo, I think you're kind of going a little bit of a prayer there. But my point being that if there's going to be an upset in any of the groups, could Morocco toppling Portugal in this group be that surprise?
I'm going to counter your argument.
Go on.
Rui Patricio. Finished the season well. Cedric at Southampton finished the season well.
They almost went down.
He finished the season. When Mark Hughes came in, they finished the season well, didn't they? They stayed up.
Okay. All right.
Gonçalo Guedes, he's my one to watch for the World Cup. You know, I hope he starts for them.
I don't know who that is.
Finished the season fantastic.
Okay.
Gelson Martins had a good season.
Okay. He did.
Yeah. And Ronaldo just won the Champions League. Bernardo Silva had a brilliant season with City.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think he had a brilliant season.
He was good. When he came on, he was good.
Yeah, he faded. Remember that goal against Arsenal? It's a brilliant season.
Okay, well, so you don't think there's going to be
Andre
an upset in this
Silva
group?
Andre Silva at AC Milan. Brilliant striker there.
He's a good striker, but he's not had a good season. So I'm just there's some key players that are coming into this.
I get your point, but like I said, I could counter it with players that
the guy they should have brought in, the guy at Wolves, is the guy they've not even picked. The guy that actually has had a good season.
Neves,
yeah. But yeah. So basically, you don't think there's going to be any chance of Morocco coming above Portugal in this group?
No. Portugal. I think Portugal potentially could top that group. I'm not convinced by that Spain team.
No, we've done Spain. We're doing the African teams now.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. No upset there.
You think
Spain and Portugal?
Okay,
Portugal and Spain, should I say?
All right. They got this kid, this winger, Ajax, Hakim Ziyech.
Yeah.
I only know about him, if I'm going to be brutally honest, because of Football Manager. I've been buying him for a couple of years now, and I like him on that game. Do any of you guys know anything about him? Because I only know a little bit of the kind of YouTube and I've been following.
He's good.
Is he good?
He's a good player. You remember Berhanda, right?
No.
You know Berhanda? He used to be in the French league.
No.
Okay.
He played with
him. He's another good player.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But Ziyech, he's brilliant, man.
Okay. I think they're pinning their hopes on him, I reckon.
Yeah.
Stick with you, Mike. First of all, did Nigeria really win the kit battle?
Yeah, they did.
You think?
To be fair, it's sold out everywhere. You can't get it. I've got mine. But you can't get it anywhere.
I saw it and I was like, is it that good?
I'm with you, Jordan. When I first saw the kit, I was thinking, hang on, I don't think it's anything special. But when I got my hands on one, and looking at it, you know, having it in your hand, it does look good.
Who won it? It's
different from the rest.
I like Peru's kit.
I think I've had a look at
it. anyway, have a look at it online. Nigeria in a tough group, Mike, with Argentina and Croatia.
Yeah.
Do you see an upset in that group?
No, I wanted to say something about Morocco.
Go on.
No, quickly, just wanted to touch on Morocco. I think we might see a shock, an upset.
You think there could be?
I think so, simply because...
Ahead of Spain or Portugal?
I think Portugal.
Okay.
Because looking at Morocco and looking at their manager, Herve Renard, he won the Africa Cup of Nations back in 2012 with Zambia. Okay, now this was... a team full of local players. They won the Africa Cup of Nations 2012, and then won the Africa Cup of Nations recently with Ivory Coast. So here's a manager.
They've got a good manager
who's able to mobilize his team, and he's well organized. So don't write off Morocco.
I'm not. It's Mike that's saying they've got no chance of getting the group.
Have you watched Portugal recently?
No, I haven't. To be fair,
okay.
I haven't.
Spain are unbeaten in 20.
Yeah.
And Portugal are coming off the back of being European champions. And you think,
4 years? So it's two years ago. And to be fair, they scraped that.
They're scraped it, but their players are a lot better now.
Really?
Yeah.
Their two centre backs are combined 80 years old, Mike.
I will say watch. That's all I'll say.
All right. I'll say watch. Back on Nigeria. Yeah. So do you think there could be an upset in that group? Can you see Nigeria toppling?
It's head over heart, George, man. Croatia are my dark horses.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I can see Nigeria coming above Croatia.
It's head over heart. I really, really, really hope so. That second half against England was very encouraging. First half wasn't. But I feel that if we can get together and select the right team, I feel we can upset, definitely.
I know I had Argentina in the kind of top tier groups of teams that can win it, but I don't think it's I don't think it's inconceivable that they could not get out of the group.
You had them in the top tier? I don't think they're in the top tier.
Some people have them in the second tier, so yes, a lot of people feel
Portugal,
they're in that kind
Argentina.
Of they're in that kind of second group. Nigeria beat Argentina late last year?
3-2.
4-2.
Was it 4-2?
It was 4-2, yeah. The keeper, is he 19 years old?
Yeah.
You say that, you're like, it's a problem.
He's not convinced
as a keeper yourself.
He's not convinced me. He's a good shot stepper.
Could there be a 6-0 in that group?
Oh, jeez. No, not that bad. Not that bad. He's not convinced me. That's all it is. But at 19, you've got to show signs of nerves. You've not played in front of a massive crowd before. So I expect him to maybe the second game to have calmed down. First game, might be a bit nerve-wracking. Second game, you get used to it, you calm down. I just want to see him command his defence a bit more, be a bit more vocal. I want to see him do a lot more talking. Let him, feel like you're at home. That's all I want to see from him.
Jones, can you see Nigeria getting out of that group?
Absolutely.
You think you got?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Ahead of who?
I mean, it's Iceland, Argentina, Croatia. I think ahead of Iceland.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
I think just ahead of Iceland. And possibly Croatia as well. Because remember, we said Croatia is, again, one of those teams.
Yeah.
On paper, they look good, but then failed to perform. The thing about Nigeria is, in tournaments, Nigeria know how to pick up form.
Entertain.
I mean, entertain, yeah. Absolutely, entertain. And looking at the crop of players they have now, they have the youngest players in the whole of the, in the tournament.
Okay.
Nigeria has. Looking at the players, they have Moses, Iwobi. I think I watched them.
Is Iheanacho, sorry. Iheanacho. Is he picked?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And they've also got...
Ndidi. He's the main guy.
Ighalo. They've got Ighalo as well.
Okay.
Now, if they're able to click, they'll cause a lot of problems.
Okay. All right. Keep an eye on
them. So don't write out Nigeria.
Fair enough.
Nigeria.
Croatia.
I mean, the game against England... It was a friendly.
Yeah.
Okay, don't judge Nigeria on that.
I was on holiday and I watched it, and it was shocking.
The first half.
It was so bad. Let's move on. Guys. Tunisia play England in the opening game. Is Tunisia's? Can anybody see an upset there, or do you think England will handle business and shut down any hope Tunisia have of gathering momentum and kind of get out of that group?
The thing with Tunisia is their star player, Youssef, I think his name is Moussakeni, is injured. I don't think... looking at the North African teams, okay, the way in which they perform in terms of winning the World Cup, they're not that great. In African Cup of Nations, they're different.
Okay.
But in terms of World Cup, they've not been that great. Tunisia... I don't see them progressing to NSCV. No.
Okay, let's wrap up with Senegal, Mike, in Group H. They're in a nice-ish group with Poland, Colombia and Japan. I think that's a group where I've not heard great things about Japan. Poland always seem to be in that kind of dark horse category but never actually do anything. and Colombia, can you see Senegal doing anything in that group?
Yeah, man, I like their team.
Yeah,
their team's exciting.
I do too.
Mane, Keita, Sako,
Agaye, Koulibaly,
Kiyote, Ndai,
Balde,
your boy Gwej there.
Yeah.
Koulibaly.
Yeah. Jones is not in. Jones is not in. No, you don't see
Senegal,
it.
Senegal have been abysmal. They've been poor.
But it depends if Mane turns up, I reckon.
No, but Mane playing for Signal has been shocking.
Mm.
He never seems to perform when he plays
for him.
He's been poor, absolutely poor. I mean, the thing with Senegal, if we cast our minds back to 2002, when they beat France in the opening, the first leg, the first game, and they beat France. You had the likes of Papa Diop, you had Diouf. Yes. And most of the players after that tournament ended up playing in the Premier League. Now, Mane is set to be the next superstar. He's not a superstar yet in Senegal. So, this is a big tournament for him to step up. I mean, to be fair, he has been in the shadow of Salah. To be fair, but he needs to perform. Now we need to see the man that we see at Liverpool in Senegal.
They're my team after Uruguay to kind of slightly keep an eye on Senegal. I've you're not having it. Okay, Jones isn't having it. Okay, all right. Let's now move on to England. Let's talk very briefly about England. Do you guys have an 11 that you would start with on game one?
Yes,
Jonesy. You go last, so you have time to think of your 11. I'll go through mine very briefly. I've gone Pickford in goal. The goalkeeping situation for me is much of a muchness. I really think it's just whatever with those three. I could pick anyone. None of them have been awful. None of them have been great. Go with Pickford. I've gone three at the back: Walker, Cahill, Maguire.
Yeah.
I'm not completely convinced with Maguire, but I've dropped Stones because Stones has really let me down.
What about Jones, bruv?
No, come on, bruv. You know me and Jones.
Phil Jones, man.
No, it's not happening. Walker I've put as a right side of a three, and I know I've always said play England players in their best positions, but I think, and I'll get to why I put Walker in a minute, and Cahill has come back into a little bit of form, and if it's him or Stones, I'd probably lean towards him. My wing-backs, I've gone with Alexander-Arnold and Danny Rose. I've gone with Rose over Young because I think with a wing-back system, you need width. And you're the left footer. And although he does cut in quite a lot, Rose, I still think at least he's got the option of using his left foot, whereas Young, not so
it's
much.
Not happening.
No. Alexander Arnold, I like him. I think he's as good a crosser of the ball as Trippier, who I think is a brilliant crosser of the ball. He's as quick as Walker. But I think more importantly, the reason why I would start Alexander-Arnold is momentum. He's got real good momentum right now, and I've really been impressed with him. I think actually he's as good as Kyle Walker right now. I really think in the 6 months of the Premier League, I really put him up there on the pedestal.
He's good at set pieces as well.
He's actually good at set pieces, and he looks fearless. I'd start him. My two in the middle would be Dier and I'd go Ruben Loftus-Cheek. For me, you can't play Dier and Henderson. I'd put Dier ahead of Henderson simply because Dier's an anchor. You tend to sit in front of the back four, the back three. He'll just sit and be that guy. Henderson might roam and chase the ball. Loftus-Cheek, I like him. I wasn't always sold on him, but I like him, and I like him on the ball. A bit of physicality in the middle there as well. And my front three, which a lot of people have been cussing me about, I would go with Ali in the hole with Kane and Vardy as the two up top. I really would. I would tell Ali, find the ball and do one of two things. Send it into the channels for Vardy to chase, or get it into Kane's feet and play off Harry Kane as a flat two. That would be my 11 in the first game. Mike, first game, who would you start?
So, again, I'm with you, Pickford in goal.
Mm-hmm. What's your system?
Same system. Mm-hmm. Happy with your back three. Mm-hmm. I feel Kyle Walker could pick up the ball in that back three and bomb forward. Mm-hmm. And obviously, good recovery to get back. Mm-hmm. I'd go with Trippier on the right. Mm-hmm. The more I watch Rolls, the more I'm less impressed with him. But out of him and Ashley Young, it's Rolls every time. So I'd go Rolls on the left. I'd go with Henderson and Loftus-Cheek. And I'd put Ali just in front of them. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go with Rashford and Harry Kane.
Okay.
I'd drop Sterling. Personally, because I think for England, I don't know. I'd rather bring him on when legs are tired.
I think it's harsh dropping Sterling because 21 goals, I think it's, and to not get picked on a World Cup year is really harsh. But the system that I think we've both picked, he's not a 10 for me.
Yeah.
And there's no wingers in that system. Yeah. So I just don't see where you play him.
My problem is him looking up. He hasn't got that knack for looking up and finding out where his players are. He's more head down, run with the ball, and then look up when he's about to pass it,
and he runs into someone
or I feel like Rashford is a goal scorer. He's got to get you goals. Sterling, a bit like Sane, they're good for club level, good under the right management, but when it comes to different styles,
the system's
like
geared to the city, isn't it?
There you go.
England and Germany.
I'd start Rashford.
I've gone with Vardy over Rashford, Mike, because I think Rashford wants to be on the ball running at defenders, whereas Vardy wants just send it 20 yards into the channel and he'll make the fullback's life a misery.
That's all Vardy can do. That's the problem.
But he's very good at it. And I think England need to keep the ball in the final third. Just keep the ball in the final third.
Do you know what? His hold-up play is left a bit to be desired. I think Rashford can do the both. He can run in behind. He can beat a man. That's what Vardy can't do. Beating a man, he's got to run. He's got to kick it and run. Mm. Whereas Rashford is skill, and Kane is Kane.
Fair enough. Yeah, so, Jonesy, who's your 11?
Same thing really with the keepers. Not really. First on the keepers,
I'll go with
Pickford as well. Do you know what? I've watched England play in the tournaments and they've tried different systems, and to me it's failed. And I think the best system for England, the system they know well, 4-4-2.
But that's what they've lost with.
No.
That's what they've lost with.
But in everything they've tried, they've failed. They've tried 3-5-2, it hasn't worked.
So you've not liked since Southgate's been in the system that he's implemented. You don't think it's worked?
I mean,
the players they have as well.
The players they have, I don't think it's worked, to be honest with you. I think England always need two strikers. Forget the number 10. I don't think it's going to work.
Okay.
I think stick two strikers out there. That's the system they know. Okay? So,
go on, give me 11.
So right back, I'll go for Walker. Mm-hmm. Centre backs, I'll go for Cahill and Jones and Danny Rose.
Jones is in your team?
Jones is in my team.
Okay.
Pick him all day, every day, over Stones.
Might like Stones,
because I think Stones will get found out if he gets a striker that likes to go in behind. Yep. I think he lacks a little bit in terms of strikers that, you know, likes to play off the shoulder and peel off. I think he gets found out.
But Jones, how many own goals do you want to score in this tournament?
Trust me. I've got experience. Don't worry about that.
All right, who's your left back?
My left back, I went for Danny Rose.
Okay.
Over Ashley Young. Because I think in a tournament like the World Cup, you want a defender. not somebody that's done a good job of playing out of position.
I don't personally rate Danny Rose, but I only give him the edge over Young simply because he's left-footed.
Yeah.
For me, it's much of a muchness. But yeah, go on.
In the middle, I'll go for Loftus-Cheek, Dyer. I'm not sure. See, England have... When it comes to the centre-mid, you've got Henderson... You've got Dyer.
That's why you can't do the emphasis on the mid. That's why 4-4-2 doesn't work.
No. But then England is rigid anyway. Yeah. So to me, that's why I think the system will suit them. And I think I will have Lingard in there.
Okay.
Lingard. Uh-huh. And in the front two, I'll go for Rashford and Kane.
So who's your midfield? So you're going...
Lingard.
Lingard on the left.
Yeah.
Or who's on the right?
On the right, I'll have Sterling.
And Loftus-Cheek and Henderson.
No.
Dyer.
Yeah.
And Kane and
Rashford
up front.
Yeah. I was even thinking of Dele Alli, but I don't know. I think I'll go over there. Yeah.
My concern about a flat four with England is that I don't think they've got the players to play a flat four.
What does Dyer do in football? Can someone please explain?
Well, the reason why I put him in.
What does he do?
You know what he does? He's basically that protection that will just sit there. And it's not sexy, and it's not creative, and it's not something.
It's not
that,
anything.
Can I say?
And
something?
Also, he's a good goal for it.
Can I say something?
Dyer.
He's good in the box.
I think people really underestimate.
He's been in the box.
I think people really underestimate that holding midfielder. How many teams do you see play off the front man?
In terms at the top of the pitch.
At the top of the pitch, yeah. And I mean, all he does, it might be such a small thing he does, but usually what they do is they screen the front man, so you can't get the ball into the front man. And with players like that, they're very effective at what they do. They're very disciplined.
I don't think Dyer is personally. I don't think Dyer is personally. I think Henderson will do a better job there.
I don't think Henderson will sit. No, I think Henderson will play.
He's done it for Liverpool.
No, he plays. He does much more playing than sitting.
He's good at the playing.
I don't think England can afford to have a player. I think England needs to have protection there. That's my point. I think England needs someone. You just sit there and protect the back three.
That's fair enough if you had someone good. But Dyer's not good at doing that. I just don't feel what he brings to the team personally. That's just my opinion. I don't think he's that guy.
Do you think, Jones, that for England, it's in the first two games in particular, we'll get to the Belgium game in a second, is it a case of, in fact, just the first game, Tunisia game, is it just win by any means possible?
Absolutely.
Or is style important?
And no. Just get the win under your
belt. 1-0, boring, own goal. Get the three points.
Get the first 3 points, settle the nerves. And then you take it from there because this is a tournament. Yeah. You're there to win.
Just get the win.
Forget about playing good the first game and not getting the 3 points.
See, here's my thing, Mike. This is why I don't agree with that. I think for England, momentum and style of play is very important. I think it's important that England, those first two games,
my stance.
Really try and put down, not only get the team on good form and scoring some goals, but get the nation back in the team and wanting to watch the team. And I think we're in a different country, obviously, but I think they will feel that excitement.
Are you telling me for England to perform well and then draw?
No, I get what you're saying.
It's a complete risk.
I think Southgate should be given a free rein to go out and entertain. That's my stance.
And from what he's saying in today's papers, that's what he's putting the emphasis. He's putting the emphasis on, boys, don't worry about stress. Don't worry about the... Just go and do what you do.
Yourself.
And I think that if they come in the first game 3-0, second game 4-1...
How do you enjoy yourself if you don't win?
Yeah, it's a risk. I totally accept it's a gamble.
The first thing to do, you get 3 points under your belt and then you build on from there.
But imagine if they go into that first game with the mentality of winning is the result. It's not what we're going... Winning is what we want to do at the end of it. But to get the win, we want to play good football. We want to play good football, win the first game 3-0, second game 3-1, have some really good football going, go into the Belgium game fearless. Because my big thing is, it's annoying me, it's how everybody's written that Belgium game off. It's, we'll have 6 points by then, we'll lose that game. Mm. Belgium have got an insane squad, but they're managed by Roberto Martinez.
Oh, geez,
so as far as I'm concerned, if I'm Gareth Southgate, I'm not losing no Martinez team. I don't care who you've got. So what I'm saying is, go into that game with 6 points and momentum and be like, you know what? We're going to beat Belgium. And imagine what that does for the squad and for the support back home. I accept it's a gamble. If they play well and draw, it's a problem.
Start as you mean to go on. Hit the ground running. Mm. You're playing against Tunisia. Mm. Put 3 goals past Tunisia. Okay. Confidence would be sky high into the next game. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to see from England. Because so many times there's been a lot of prospect from the England team and they've gone out there and just disappoint everyone. Mm-hmm. So, yes, hit the ground running, get that 3 points in the bag, and then you kick on.
Mike, can England beat Belgium?
Yeah. Is it, with that system, yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
He needs to do one of two things. He needs to stick someone on Lukaku and then cut off the supply to him.
Phil mm-hmm. Jones?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, to be fair, that's the one thing yeah. Phil probably can do.
Yeah, man marking. He's really good at man marking. It's true. I like Phil Jones. You need to cut off Lukaku and cut off the supply to him. Supply to him. And then the third thing would be man mark Hazard at the game.
Okay.
Because that's their main key threat, Hazard.
I don't think that will work, man mark Hazard. I think the crucial...
United do it all
yeah,
the time.
Jose does it too all the time, right?
I think what will work is... having whoever's playing that holding role to cut off Hazard from linking up with Lukaku. Mm-hmm. We've seen so many times. He likes to do that, come off the flanks and look for that little 1-2 give and go. So if he can cut that out, I'm sure that...
My next question is going to be kind of always piggybacking off that point there. Yeah. I think if England have 6 points, and that's the important caveat here, if England have 6 points in that game, I think there's an argument to drop Harry Kane for that third game right. and play Rashford and Vardy right. because I'm thinking Rashford and Vardy and all that pace against Alderweireld and company who have got injury problems, I think could cause problems. And what it also might do is it cut off the supply line early yeah. to get to Hazard. If you've got those two and you've got Belgium going backwards because they're being pressed by those front two, I think that could influence your point in terms of not getting the ball even anywhere near Hazard to cause problems. Would you risk dropping Harry Kane in that third game, again I repeat, providing you've got the 6 points in the bag already, and trying to really make company and Alderweireld do what they don't want to do, which is run?
There's a problem there.
Go on.
KDB.
But again, what I'm saying is if they're so worried about getting the ball out of their first third,
yeah, that means you're sacrificing two players to go forward.
Yeah, that's a big sacrifice, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That gives that guy spit. Oh, that's what you don't want to do. That's why I said cut off the supply line to Lukaku. That was my marker number one, was to mark Lukaku. Number two, cut off that supply line, and that's KDB.
But can you not do that, like I said, in their first third? Because if they're...
Yeah, so, I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What you're saying essentially is pin them back.
Make them go backwards. Yeah.
I get that.
I mean, the legs of Kane.
That could work. That could work if you had good passes in the midfield.
Right, Gareth Southgate. Mike, are you feeling him?
He's winning me over.
He's winning unit.
His ruthlessness, his swag, everything. He's winning me over. He's saying the right things. He's doing the right things. He dropped Hart. How long have I been calling for Hart to be dropped?
You have.
That was business number one, man. And he done that. So I'm impressed by the aura he's got around him and the aura he's got around the team. He's essentially telling these players like Rashford, who have been held back by Jose, he's telling them, go out and enjoy yourselves. Yeah. And that's what he done against Costa Rica. And you could see he was enjoying the football. Yeah. He was taking people on. He was doing skills, flicks here and there. So, he's winning me over. He's won me over, should I say.
He's won me over. He's had some really good press, Jones, in the last few months. Do you think there's a danger, though? Maybe I'm being my usual cynical self here, that we're seeing a recurring theme from high-profile people in the media, be it pop stars, footballers, whereby if the World Cup doesn't go well, they're going to absolutely smash him. They're going to... He was never good. He was rubbish in press conference. He was crap. I don't know why we had him. Is it almost going too well?
Building him up to...
Yeah.
For the fall.
But then we always get this, don't we, with England. But then with Southgate, myself as well, he has won me over. Because at first I didn't know what his philosophy was, what he stood for. I thought he was just another interim manager coming in to just steady the ship, and then somebody else comes in. But I think he's put his authority as an England manager. I think he has a clear vision as to where he wants to go with the team, and I think for once, we need to give him that respect, because although You might say Southgate is not one of the big names out there, I think he's done everything on merit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he will surprise a lot of people, especially the way that Rashford is playing. I think he's just giving him the free will. Go out there, express yourself and play. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big, big, big part of what usually England as a team missing in their preparation towards a big tournament.
Okay, let's just finish up, guys, with a little bit of non-World Cup chat very briefly. I mean, since the last pod, so many things have happened. Fabinho's joined Liverpool. Real have become triple European champions. Arsenal have a new manager. Amazon have bought Premier League TV packages. A mid-season break has kind of been announced. Kane and Poch have signed new long-term deals. FA want to sell Wembley. But the two
Madrid
biggest...
have a new manager.
Who?
Madrid have a
Madrid,
new manager.
Yes, we discussed that earlier on. But the two biggest things I want to just briefly, and we'll get into this a bit more on another pod. For me, the two biggest stories have been Karius and Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
Let's start with Karius. Mike, you're a goalkeeper. After what happened in that final, does Klopp have a duty to stick with Karius, considering he bought him, he stuck with him, and to kick him out now, you know, does he have a duty to kind of consider the long-term implications of what happened in that final? Or has he got to be ruthless and just say, sorry, mate, you're not good enough, you let me down, you got to go?
It all depends on if you feel he's good enough. If he feels he's good enough, then yeah, he does have a duty to him. If he doesn't feel he's good enough, then he has no duty towards him. You know, football's a business where it's it is ruthless at the end of the day. Because at the end of the day, if it's not him, it's got to be the manager. And you don't have that time that you used to be putting your arm around players. You know, Fergie could have done it. Wenger could have done it. Klopp, you could say, is on borrowed time, so you need to be ruthless. But if he feels he's good enough, then listen, you need to get behind him and say, you know, you're going to have your chance again.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, pick your head up. And then the piece about the concussion,
I mean,
was interesting.
It was interesting.
I don't believe they would have done it in defence of him.
Okay,
I think it is something to consider.
Okay,
but. Anyway, you know my thoughts. I don't think the first goal should have stood anyway.
Yeah.
It's against the laws. But the second goal, I can't defend.
Fair enough. And just finally on Sterling, Jonesy, do you think there's something more going on here than just an agenda against a football player? Is there something more to this? Are you sensing that this is more than just an agenda?
I think so, Jordan, because I think since Sterling wanted to leave Liverpool and join Man City, you saw all the big, you know, the uproar that came about with his move to City. And I think the media were not fair to Sterling. I mean, he had a wonderful season at Liverpool. As a footballer, you want to go where you can win trophies.
Yeah.
And he made that transition to Man City. His off-field activities, I mean, he's a human being after all. But one thing I don't understand with England is that when there's a big tournament coming up, the media always find stories that will affect
negatively
either the team or the player. And I think Sterling is just, you know, another scapegoat. What has him having a gun on his shin got to do with the price of fish? Do you know what I mean? When he's playing, he has his socks on. No one is going to see that gun. Okay? I do feel for, you know, the mothers and parents and brothers and sisters who've lost their loved ones to knife and gun crime on the streets of London. But I don't think you should...
The two are not related.
I don't think it's related.
We're going to go into those, like I say, a bit more in depth on another pod. We've got to wrap up now. But Jones and Mike, thank you very much for coming on this week's FFP. Don't forget, we will be doing sporadic shows throughout the podcast, throughout the World Cup, sorry. Subscribe on iTunes Football Fans Podcast. We are on Spotify. We're on Audio Boom. Go out and find out. Go on to give us a review, share, like, show us some love. Till next week. Peace.